I'm Carol Erdahl, and I'm a librarian at an elementary school in Roseville, Minnesota. And I've also been doing some study in children's literature. That's kind of my thing. I spent a lot of time getting my master's degree in library science, and then after being an elementary school librarian now for the last 12 years, realized that you spent so much time in dealing with the books that I've taken. Last year I had a sabbatical to do some study, you know, actually in children's literature, because I think we get so caught up that we lose touch with what we're dealing with. You know, that's easy to do. But what I'd like to do today, and as long as it's just the few of us, we can maybe do it much more informally. And I guess the first thing is to, I like this thing that C.S. Lewis, I had this thing that he had written about children's writing for children. And he said that he felt that a children's story which is enjoyed only by children is a bad children's story. And I think that's kind of true. And I suppose what I would like to do today, the way I kind of set this out, and if, you know, we can do it differently, would be to just talk a little bit, you know, kind of in general about children's books and how we deal with children in books. And then I'd like to take specific books and just show them to you and talk about them and what, you know, why I think they're particularly good ones, and maybe inspire you in terms of what kinds of books to be looking for with kids. Does that sound all right to you? Yeah. And I guess the fact that you're here indicates that you're interested, and the fact that you have little children, and I is kind of fun too, because I do deal with preschool. We do the, you know, the preschool roundup for the kindergartners, and we've done some story hours trying to introduce children to the school before they actually come. Now, a lot of children, come on in. We're a small group, but maybe that might be more fun in the long run.
Are you talking about young children's books?
Well, we're starting with young children's, and then we're hoping to get up to the others. What age are your kids?
My kids are both 11 and 14.
Uh-huh. I wonder if I met your son. Do you have a son with you?
No.
Ah, because I was talking with a young fellow over there about books the other day. We will get on to some of those books. If you'd like to sit in on that, or...
Well, I might come back in a little bit,
sure.
If you don't mind, because
no.
I really don't want to...
No, we're going to start off with the little ones,
okay.
And then we'll get to the others. Sure, go right ahead. That, you know, as you mentioned before about the fact that, you know, your family didn't do so terribly much in terms of reading, that I think you kind of have recognized how important it is to read to kids when they're little. And, you know, I think... no matter how little they are. We were talking last week, we did a session, and someone was saying how you start reading to children even when they're just infants, and all they hear is the sound. You know, we sing lullabies. That is really part of their language growth. I mean, you go from lullabies to nursery rhymes to all kinds of song-type things, and that this is important in terms of their listening and hearing both the sound and the rhythm. Mm-hmm. And that they've done studies. There's the book Kushla and Her Books, which was written by an Australian woman, in which she had a child with many birth defects, a really handicapped child, whom they had told her would never, you know, they just expected her to have just above a vegetable type existence. And they started reading to her, and that child reads and talks and does all kinds of things that they, you know, originally had said would not be possible. And she attributes it to the fact that they read to her. They actually, when she was in the, you know, the bassinet, they just started reading to her then. So it almost is a mystical kind of thing in a way, except there must be those physiological things that take place.
I worked in a preschool for a while, and you could recognize some of the kids that their parents did read to them and those that didn't, because those who did read seemed to have much more knowledge about things, and their vocabulary
right.
was broader.
And I think, too, as I see kids coming into school, those that have had parents or someone to read to them at home are much more interested when you want to read to them at school. I think those that have had it, the interest has been already built. Whereas with those that haven't, you really have to start to begin to build interest in it. It isn't something that kids just automatically take to. I think they do like it. I think maybe they like the contact and the attention when they're little. But I think when we get them in kindergarten, those that have had stories read just seem to want more stories. And those that haven't, you have to kind of win them and take them along. So I think that's an important thing for us as parents and, you know, as teachers to know about that. I think it's important too, and as you look to your kids now as they are beginning to read, that one thing I think happens is that parents stop reading once the children can read themselves. Mm-hmm. And I guess I'd like to just say, please don't do that, because I think it's important for them to still have that reading being done to them. And we have, in school, we have some teachers who will read to their class, you know, kind of take a half hour out of the day and read to their class, and others that, you know, just as a matter of principle, they just don't want to be bothered doing that. And inevitably, the kids that have the teacher that reads to them, those kids are reading more books. And I can see it. I have a, in the fifth grade, there's one teacher who just loves to read to her class. And her kids check out more books than either of the other two fifth grade classes in that building. Mm. And I think it's just, come on in. Come on
Nobody could find you.
Oh, we should hang a big three out front. Why don't you just come join us over here? We're starting now with kind of the picture books, the preschool, early school, and then we will get into the, you know, upper grade books later.
Junior high, high school?
Well, kind of to junior high. I don't get too far beyond, but, you know, I think by that time we kind of have them getting into other kinds of adult books. But
yeah, that's the part we're concerned about.
Uh-huh.
Right in between.
Yeah. But we can certainly, you know, I do have some things that we could talk about that too.
You mean like the kids read these Judy Blume books?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. We'll talk about some of that too.
Oh, yeah.
Judy Blume went to the same high school I did.
Oh,
no, she was there after me.
Oh,
so then.
Okay.
But there was another woman here who also has older children, and she said she was going to just go out and have a cup of coffee or something and come back.
For the second, later on.
For a little later on.
You go to the same.
Sure, you do that.
Older. You're welcome to stay.
You're welcome to stay, but
interrupt.
But sure, you feel free to do that. Sure, that'll be fine. Yeah, we've just been talking about how parents can enable and facilitate children with reading, and we had just commented how important it is to be reading to children right from the very beginning, and that we commented she had had some experience with preschool, and I of course see the children, I'm a school librarian, and I see them when they come in as kindergartners, that those that have had a parent or someone reading to them at home are just so willing to hear stories in school, whereas you have to kind of win the others along if they haven't had that kind of experience. We were just getting to the point where the children start to read by themselves, and I think the strong temptation on the part of parents is to have the child then do either reading by them alone or reading to the parent. And it is, you know, it's fun for them to read to you and to read books that they're able to read. But at the same time, their interests and everything are still beyond what they can maybe read themselves. And I think it's important for parents to continue to read to them, even when they can read the books themselves. And we were commenting about a fifth grade in our school. We have three fifth grade sections. In one, the teacher still spends a half an hour a day reading to her class, and the others are not quite that dedicated, and the children in that classroom inevitably every year it seems they are checking out more books from the library and reading more. And I think that kind of goes hand in hand, where they have that encouragement and the active participation. And I think that's the important thing. You know, kids catch on very soon when you're telling them what to do but you're not doing it. And I think that oftentimes, you know, we do that as parents. And I guess what I would want to encourage is that you would continue to read to them even when they can begin to read themselves, and maybe even share that and encourage them to read to their younger brothers and sisters. I remember reading to my sister, and that I think is a neat thing. And we do that in school too. We oftentimes pair sixth graders with first graders to have them read to them, because it's good for the child to build, you know, that kind of positive feeling about themselves being able to read as well as sharing it with,
sure, why don't you, I bet your little guy would like to look at a book while he sits there.
How about if we give you a few books to look at while we talk? How would that be, since we're talking about books?
I'm glad to hear you say that, because my little boy's going to third grade, and I often have a feeling that at night, at bedtime, he should be reading to me more. And yet he wants me to read to him.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's if you can balance it. If they want to read, let them read to you.
Sometimes we do every other page or something like that.
My temptation is to have him read to me, because our older boy is a real good reader, real good in school, and the next one could care less if he reads, and he's a real slow reader.
Uh-huh.
But I always thought he should be reading to us to improve his reading, and
no.
We should be reading to him.
No, you read to him and let the teacher work on the improvement of the skills at school. I think we, you know, and on the other hand, it's interesting, we get parents that come to school very concerned that they're, we oftentimes have kindergartners who can read, you know, those kind of special children. And I have parents come and tell me, well, they don't want their children checking out these easy books. They want these other books for their children. And I say, that's fine. And I think that they certainly should be reading at a level, if they can read the wilder books, they should be reading those. But they shouldn't miss the marvelous picture books that are available. And I think that oftentimes happens, that a lot of times as parents, we are so concerned and
push,
so
push,
proud
shove,
of our
shove.
Children that we're pushing them, right, push, push, shove, shove. I'm glad you said it and not me first. But I think that's one thing that I can see. And I think that, you know, it's important that they learn the process of decoding and reading, but they need to have the fun. If reading is not fun, they're not going to want to read. And I think as parents, our main thing is motivational. It's motivating them to enjoy reading. I mean, what do you read for? You read either to be entertained or you read for information. And children are no different. Mm-hmm. They read because it's fun or because they want to find out something. And I think that, you know, we should not expect them to want to read just so that they can demonstrate that they can do that. They get enough of that in school, and I really do think as parents that what we do should be fun with reading. We should never make it into work with the kids. They do get a lot of that at school, and I think most schools have all kinds of programs. If your guy is having trouble with reading, I'm sure he's getting help there. And I think one of the main things is if he wants to read, it's amazing, once that they enjoy reading or what the book can give them, a lot of times they overcome and can move faster through things. So I guess that's what I think. If we can keep it fun for them, that's the main thing.
Your comment kind of struck me as humorous. My daughter, 5-year-old daughter, wants to read really bad, and she obviously doesn't know how to read. She hasn't gone to kindergarten yet. But she picked up a bedtime storybook that she was given, which is for us to read to her. It's not on her level for reading it. And it was Sleeping Beauty. And she started out, you know, and she says, once, and we deciphered every word, you know, and she got the first sentence down perfectly, and she read it over about 6 times. And each new word, she had to start at the beginning again and read the whole sentence up to that point, and on and on. And so finally, when my husband came home, she says, Dad, I can read the story. I don't even need my book.
Yeah, I think that's true. But, you know,
my son will read letters. You know, he knows his alphabet really well.
Sure.
And then he writes down a whole bunch of letters. And he says, now what is that word? Well.
But see, that's all part of their getting acquainted with language. And mm-hmm. I think those are important things and fun things. And I guess that's what I think is important, if we can keep it fun for them. Because then when the time comes, they'll put it all together that much more easily, and they'll do it with enjoyment too. Okay, I think another thing, I just have some notes here, and I think it's as we go through that with your little ones, it's good to start with lots of times with books that have no words at all, just so that they are looking at the pictures and that they can look for details and look for things that kind of spark their interest. And we spend a lot of time at the beginning of kindergarten, and you know, I have the kids read the pictures, and they'll find things that you won't even see in those pictures because they're looking, you know, at it. And so oftentimes as parents, we're so quick to go through that we don't stop to look at the pictures. So I think that's another important thing. I'll show you some books that are just pictures with no text, as well as books that are what we call picture books. They're stories with pictures. And many times, artists and illustrators will put in fun things. There's the story of Charlie Needs a Cloak. I don't have a copy of it. It's by Tommy DePaula. But it's a whole little picture book about how you need Charlie's cloak is all ragged and torn because of this sheep that keeps eating it. Well, through this whole story, it's all how you need to have the wool to make into the cloth. But in between, there's a little mouse that's constantly stealing things. And so you have this little sub-story going on. Well, lots of adults read that book and they never see that little mouse who's taking all these things and making them into putting them into his own little house until a child has told the adult. So I think there are lots of little things, and those are the things that are fun for children too. One thing I mentioned last week to a group is that we had to travel a long way to get here, and we didn't have our children with us this time. They are all grown up now. But when they were younger in the car, what we would sometimes do is read to them in the car. Now, if you have, as we did, three kids, and they get to that point where, you know, it's kind of a lot of, you know, territory building in the car as to whose seat is who and where the line goes and you don't come over, you know, all of that, that if you can read, now some people get sick reading in the car, but if you can read, that's a really fun way to pass time, is if they're older, let them read to each other, or one of you as a parent read to the kids. And it is amazing how it passes a lot of time in the car. And I just pass that on as kind of a little tip. Okay, then beyond reading to children, it's important that they have the books. And you were talking before about how you get these books through the different book clubs and whatever. And I think that one thing, as a librarian, I'm very conscious of the fact that we do have some marvelous libraries in this country of ours. And that has been one, I think, of the most important developments in terms of reading and children and literacy. And that has been the establishment of libraries. And we've had very good funding. And right now, libraries are in a real crunch. But I think basically most of our schools have very fine libraries, as well as having public libraries. And I think, you know, to encourage you to use those. These books are getting so expensive. I have the one that he's sitting there, The Clown of God. That book is $14. And, you know, if you're going to buy a $14 picture book, that gets to be very expensive.
You're very careful with it. You don't want,
right.
You know.
It's just, it gets to be perhaps, you might want to invest that in some books, but you don't want to do that all the time. And another development, of course, is the whole development of paperback books. And I really think that for most families, paperbacks are very adequate. That book is available in paperback at $4. Well, I think, you know, that's a much better buy if you're, unless you want it for a special reason. So I hope that you're all aware of paperbacks. You know, we use them for adults, but they most of the children's picture books and everything nowadays are coming out in paperbacks. And it is fun for a child to have their books at home, and I think that that is an encouragement to them. But I think, you know, that's something you'll have to weigh and balance as to when you want to check out from a library and when you want to have the book yourself. And there will be certain ones that they love that you'll say, we'll have to have this, and there'll be others that you like that you'll want to have for them. So I think that that's important. And I think another thing is that as a librarian, sometimes we get rather lofty in what we expect of literature. And I think it's important that as parents and as teachers that we recognize that children need to read all kinds of books too. That even as I like to read an Agatha Christie, or I might want to read you know, some kind of a flimsy novel just for the fun of it, that kids have to do the same thing. And we cannot expect that they are going to only read books that we think are such great books. I think we want to direct them and guide them, provide them with what are really quality and good books, but at the same time recognize that they're going to have to read Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew, that if that's what they want, that's fine too. And not always be instructing them, so to speak. And I think that, I don't know, I can speak, my kids are grown up now, and I look back and I think of things that I wish that I had done differently. And there was a family here last week where I felt, so this little boy was about 5 or 6, and that poor little boy, his parents loved him dearly, but everything had to be a lesson kind of thing. I mean, he couldn't eat without being kind of, you know, as we sat at the table, he was being told that, you know, the fork goes here and you know how to do things. And I thought, oh dear, there must be some time in life when we're just having a good time and not, it doesn't have to be a learning experience. And I think the same thing with reading. There has to be time when it's just, you know, read what you want and not have to be held accountable either to a teacher for a book report or to a parent, you know, who thinks that that book is trash. I mean, there is a place for trash in our life as long as we recognize it as such. And I guess that's another thing that I'd like to say. Then I think that there should be the understanding, too, that there are no guarantees. No, you can have all the finest books and you can read to your child and you might still wind up with a child that might not like to read. And I have had such a child. And I think that we just have to accept the fact that there will be those who, our son says, well, I know how to read. He's an excellent reader. He read when he had to in school. And now he's just graduated from college. And now he says, now I'm having time to read the books that I want to read. Whereas he's had to read all kinds of other books. And he's never been one to read much on his own just for fun. But he's had other interests. He's been a musician and other things, and that just wasn't part of his life. And I think, you know, as parents, we have to not take that as any judgment on us that we've done things wrong or that, you know, all children will automatically love books. They won't. We can do the best we can to help them love them. But I just thought I should put that in there because I think sometimes it's... We oftentimes take onto ourselves if our children don't like what we like, we think we've done something wrong, and we just have to expect that they're not going to be just like us. Okay, beyond that now, I thought what I would like to do is just share with you some books and then let you look at them later. These books have all been taken from Ginny's Corner, which is the children's library up on the second floor of Koinonia. They do have cards in the back of them, and I will take responsibility if you'd like to check any of these out to take back to your lodge to read with your children. I'll take the responsibility of getting the cards over to the library for you. But I just thought I'd just mention some of them. The earliest books, of course, that we use with children are generally the nursery rhyme kinds of things that they can repeat with you. They learn. They're kind of sing-songy. Then we also think in terms of alphabet books, and there are just oodles of alphabet books on the market. This one on Market Street is a new one, came out a year or so ago, and I thought, sure, it was going to win the Caldecott Award, which is the award given for the children's picture book, the best picture book in the United States published that year. It did not. It was one of the honor books. But I think it's one of those books that really sparks imagination. That she has taken, there's a little rhyme in the beginning about going to Market Street, and this is what the person saw. And she has used an old-fashioned engravings that kind of inspired this, where you would have the sign hanging out in front of the door of what the store was. Well, she has taken a apple and created the person out of the apples and just gone through. And I think it's just delightful. And the children have just loved it, and it's a good thing to let them then take a letter, maybe the first letter of their name, and have them think of something that they like that begins with that letter, and let them do something the same thing. Make a person, you know, with that kind of thing. It's, to me, it goes beyond just teaching what the letter is. Here you have M for music, and you have all the different instruments, so that it's kind of sparks the imagination, and I think any literature should appeal to our imagination. I think whether it's for adults or for children, really, you know, children's books don't differ from adult books except in degree. They really should be doing the same thing for the child that the books that we read do for us. They should enrich our lives, they should expand our imagination, they should provide experiences for us, and they should appeal to our senses and to our emotions and provide us with all kinds of metaphor.
I like that, musical instruments, because then you could go through and tell them, you know, what each of the, and the same
right.
with the noodles, the different kinds of noodles.
Yeah, just think. And the kids, this is a book that children can sit and look at for a long, long time.
Who wrote that, please?
This is by Anita Lobel, and the little words at the beginning are by her husband, Arnold. Arnold Lobel has done the Frog and Toad books.
Okay.
These are beginning reading. I can read books. And he has received, this was a Newbery Honor book. He got the Caldecott Award for his book called Fables 2 years ago. This one is just a delightful in terms of I can read. It has what we call the controlled vocabulary, so that it would be a vocabulary of a first grader. But it also has just a marvelously fine story, too. But
Little Bear.
Yeah, Little Bear is the other one by Manerick. That's, those are kind of classics, too. Okay, alphabet books are not all like this. We have Anno's alphabet, and over at the bookstore here, they have many of Anno's books. Anno is Japanese, and he has done some exciting things with books without texts, but they kind of, the dimension on the illustrations are, they don't always make sense. They're really those mind-boggling kinds of things. Again, something that you as an adult will enjoy reading as well as your child. That's another thing. Don't read anything to your children that you don't enjoy yourself. You know, my husband started reading A Wrinkle in Time to our children years ago, and he just didn't like A Wrinkle in Time, whether it was a Newbery Award book or whatever. It just wasn't one that he cared for. And he read it rather grudgingly. And when our son read it 3 years later by himself, he said, boy, he says, that was a really good book, but I didn't think it was very good when Dad read it. And I think he really kind of caught the thing that Lowell thought, well, this was the book to read, and he read it, and it just wasn't. So I think a good rule of thumb is don't bother to take time to read something to a child unless you enjoy it. Of course, if they enjoy it, and you're just getting tired of it, which oftentimes happens, then maybe it's the time to introduce something else, too. But Anno has some good alphabet things, too. Anno has other books, and these are all without words. And in this one, you follow a fellow through. He's coming up to Britain on a boat. And then, as you go through the book, there is no story, but you follow this fellow, and you create the story, or the child can create the story and look at it. It's kind of like that print, that Bruegel print, you know, of where you the fair, where there, you look at it, and there's all kinds of things happening on one picture. Well, this is kind of what Anno does. He gives you, you know, page after page with many different things going on. And he does that in several of his books. Start with some of those no-text books. You start with alphabet books, some counting books, some Mother Goose rhymes, books that are fun, books that cause the child to, you know, enjoy the sound and the pictures, and then to think and to create. Look Again by Tana Hoban is one that is done again without text. This is not, in a sense, the same kind of world. This is the real world, but it's created in a very creative way, where they have a little window as to what the next page is, but you don't know until you turn the page. Yes. So it becomes kind of a game, as well as seeing then what it is. And she has many that are similar too. So she was would be another one that I would suggest you get acquainted with. Then there are all kinds of marvelous picture storybooks. And I guess, first of all, I'd like to talk about some of the classics. And, you know, classics, as I tell the children in school, I tell them these are kind of the oldies but goodies, you know. And they love to hear stories that even I, you know, if I tell them I read this when I was your age, well, then their eyes are, you know, because it's hard to imagine me being their age.
But, my daughter does that too.
Did you read this?
Were you really ever a little girl? Yeah, you know. One of them that's one of my favorites is Millions of Cats. And Millions of Cats is a fun one because it's a story that about a couple that wanted a cat. And I think most every child has wanted a kitten at one time or another. And the marvelous thing about this is it has the repetition of this little rhyme, cats here, cats there, cats and kittens everywhere, hundreds of cats, thousands of cats, millions and billions and trillions of cats. And as the story goes, the old man, you know, meets up with all these cats. He can't choose which one. And it's, how does he choose? Well, then the cats start to fight. And the story is resolved. And it's interesting, if you look at the title page, there's only one cat, although the title is Millions of Cats. So you know that that one cat is going to be very important. And again, it's a time when you can look at the pictures as well as the text. This story was done back in the 30s, I believe, and it is considered one of the real classics, and it is a fun book. And it's a time when you can actually look and just say, you know, back then they didn't do much with color. And that's, of course, true. If you look at Ferdinand, another favorite, one that I can remember my first grade teacher reading to us, Ferdinand is a delightful book, and it's also done in black and white. So that's a time when I can share with them that when I was little, they didn't have all that color, and our books were done mainly in black and white, but we could enjoy them. Now, Ferdinand is a book that, you know, it's interesting. Ferdinand really is a little satire on the Spanish Civil War. Now, you don't have to tell your kids that. They don't have to know it. But it's something, if you know it as you read it, it gives you kind of insight. It's really an anti-war or anti-violence book, because Ferdinand is the gentle bull who doesn't want to be like the other bulls. And yet, simply because he's always sitting in the flowers and smelling the flowers, and he doesn't want to butt, and he doesn't want to do all this stuff. But the day those guys come looking for somebody, what happens but Ferdinand sits on the bee? Mm-hmm. And of course, he then demonstrates all those marvelous powers that he has of strength and all of that, and he is taken then to Madrid. Well, it's a fun story, but it's interesting. As an adult, you can see lots of things in it that children wouldn't. But that's one of the keys, I think, to enjoying books is looking at them, reading the pictures. There are vultures. Those vultures give you a warning that something is coming. Why would there be vultures looking over these bulls? Well, you know, that's something that children don't necessarily need to know, but it's something that you might want to know. Okay, as we think of some of those, we think of some of the tales, the folk tales, and one of the favorites of children and of mine is the Three Billy Goats Gruff. And there are many of these stories. You think of the fairy tales, the Cinderella, the Rumpelstiltskin, all of these. And I think the important thing is to share them with your children and let them, you know, participate with you in them. Children love to play stories. And especially, I think this is a simple one where they can pretend they're going, the goats going over the bridge. And the one thing that I especially like about this one is that the troll actually looks like what a Norwegian troll, true to Norwegian folklore, would look like. He's a grotesque, big, ugly thing. A few years ago, I did a study of different editions of this story. And there were about 7 different editions of the Three Billy Goats Gruff that I could get my hands on. And as we looked at them, some artists made the troll like a little Tyrolean imp, you know, with the little lederhausen and the... Well, that is not true to the Norwegian folklore at all. And I think that's one thing that, as you choose books, look at the pictures and see, are they really presenting the story the way the story should be? Or is it kind of a romanticized, or Disney is one of the classics. Although we enjoy many of his things, he has really trivialized some things by making them too sweet and too simple. So as a parent, that's something that, you know, you should be thinking about when you're looking at books and at illustrations. Don't look for anything that's just cute for cutie, you know, because that's oftentimes not true to the material that it's dealing with. The Tomten, for those of you that, if any of you are Swedish, this is one of the Swedish tales, and this is another one in which the text, the rhythm and pattern of the words, plus these marvelous illustrations, really give you the whole impact of that Tomten who goes around, you know, and he speaks in Tomten language, which is a silent little language that a dog can understand, a silent little language that sheep can understand. And then he feels so badly because the children are sleeping. And here he comes. Winters come and winters go. I have seen people large and small, but they have never seen me, says the Tomten. Then he tiptoes over to where the children are asleep. If only they would wake up, I could talk to them in Tomten language, a silent little language that children could understand. Well, that's all part of the story. And I think if we can, you know, share books like this, children will really have some understanding as well as some real enjoyment of a story. And it's the rhythm and the choice of words. There are flat stories. You can have someone tell the story of Cinderella or Rumpelstiltskin in the flattest terms that really don't evoke the images that are there. And I think that as a parent, I wish you'd read through some of these things that come in many different editions. There are also, of course, other stories that perhaps we're not acquainted with that have been done in picture book form. It Could Always Be Worse is a folk tale, and it has been delightfully illustrated by Margot Zemach, and it's just fun. And I think the folk tales are fun stories because they show adults to be silly, to be not too bright sometimes. And I think for children, they have to know that adults can laugh at themselves too. And that's important. Arrow to the Sun was a Caldecott Award several years ago. This really is a Pueblo Indian tale. It's done in a rather dramatic, graphic, illustrated type. It's not your traditional kinds of illustrations. It would be a fun book to look at with your children and see what they see or how they respond to it. This was originally done as a movie, in fact. McDermott did this as a movie and then took and made it into a book, which is just the reverse of the usual procedure. There are all kinds of books like that that you can share with your children. I just want to mention this Clown of God. This one is over in the bookstore here too, and I wonder if they don't have it in paperback. But the interesting thing about this is that Tommy DePaula, who both wrote and illustrated this, is a friend of a friend of mine. And this book was dedicated to her. And so it was kind of special. Noreen Odland is a professor at the University of Minnesota of children's literature. And when this book came out, I told her, I says, oh, Noreen, I think that the book this year that's going to get the Caldecott is this book that Tommy dedicated to you. Well, it didn't get the Caldecott that year, and I really think it should have. But we had, Lowell and I were on a study leave this spring, and we spent an afternoon with Tommy DePaula, and we talked about some of his books and the fun that he has. He is, his father's side of the family is Italian, and his mother's side is Irish, and so he has just recently done some Irish stories too. And it's fun that he has drawn from his own personal family history for the material in his books. This is a lovely legend. It's similar to Why the Chimes Rang. And it's a lovely Christmas story. And it's very well illustrated. And it was the Children's Theater in Minneapolis presented this in dramatic form. And it was just a beautiful production. So I would recommend this to you. He has done some other books. One is First One Step Now, The Other, which is a very touching little story of a grandfather who was teaching his...
Now the other.
Of the grandfather teaching the little boy to walk, and then later on the little boy having to help the grandfather. And it's one of those things that I think points up a fact of life for all of us. And there's a new book that came out a year or two ago by Norma Farber on how does it feel to be old? Is that it? I have it at home, and it's also a little child asking an older lady, you know, about being old. And I think that some of these are in response, of course, to kind of emphases that we have in our society, and lots of times those books are not very good. I think we get fads in our books too, but some of them are, and I think those are two that are very well done. Okay, we can go on looking at picture books. I've brought others here, and I would just leave them here for you to look at later. One thing, as I think about religious children's books, I do have some feelings that sometimes we provide religious books that are not very good for our children. A few years ago, I was asked to speak at Augsburg College on selecting children's books for church libraries and things like that. And at that time, Augsburg Publishing House had just come out with kind of a pop-up kind of Bible story series that I thought was exceedingly poor. And it was really kind of too bad because the editor was there. I guess my point is that I think, especially with books that deal with Bible stories, that we should have books that are really quality books. And by that I mean books that do not trivialize the story. I think if it's the story of David or the story of Ruth or of Joseph and his coat, that those stories can be told in ways that children can understand them without being trivialized. And I think that it's important that we do that. I often think we in the Lutheran Church, we bemoan the fact that so many children get through confirmation and then you don't see them in church anymore. And I think sometimes if we give them books that look like comic books and then try to have them accept the teachings or the stories in those books as being significant, it's rather difficult to do. And I think when our older daughter was about 5 or 6, it was on a Sunday afternoon, and Lowell was taking a nap, and I was sitting downstairs, and I could hear her upstairs. She must have been supposedly taking a nap, too, as I think about it. Anyway, she was saying, "Becky, Becky." I thought, "What is she doing?" And so I kind of tiptoed up the stairs, and she was sitting in the middle of her bed, and she was going, "Becky." And then the next thing, she was tilting her head like this. And so I kind of made a little noise on the step and came in, and I kind of asked, you know, what was she doing? I thought I heard somebody calling her name. Who was calling? And she says, "Well," she says, "I was waiting for God to call me like he did Samuel." And I think, you know, that simple story had that kind of power. But I think, you know, to make it into a comic book, it is not going to have that effect. So I guess I don't have lots of books to recommend that you buy of Bible stories. There's Noah's Ark by Speer, which I think is just absolutely delightful. And I think that you can sit down and go through that story And it's all the realism of what life on an ark would be like, you know, and the fun that they had. And then there's that message at the end. And Noah went and planted a vineyard. You know, it's that whole thing. There's the hope, there's the rainbow, but it's not trivialized. It's a picture book, but it's done in a way that does not make it seem like a joke. And I guess that's what I mean to say about that. Then, beyond that, when we talked about all of these picture books, and we've talked about some I Can Read books, and I think I Can Read books are important for children, and most school libraries will have many I Can Read books. There are many different ones. Some of them are better than others. In some of them, the vocabulary, people have not been as creative with the words that they've had as others. I think Lobel, Hoban, Manerick, these people have done a fine job. Judy Delton has just come out with some new books that are done in this kind of controlled vocabulary form. Now, most authors will tell you they don't want to write, they won't write with a limit on the words that they can use. And I think that's maybe right for some of them. I think some of them have been able to do a creative job in that kind of a context. Beyond that, then, we get to the point where children are reading on their own as well as continuing to have you read with them. And I guess there are just a few books that I would like to mention, and these are by no means definitive. I said if one were going to come and bring all the books, I'm kind of limited by what they have at Ginny's Corner, which is a marvelous collection. I think you really, have you been doing the selecting for there? They really have a fine selection.
Really nice.
Yeah, they really do. Charlotte's Web, of course, I think is the classic, I think, of our time for children. It is a book that I think is challenging to adults as well as to children. It is not simplified, but yet, you know, it's a book that a good reader in third grade can read and enjoy. And yet it deals with very important things like friendship and death. And it's what we would call a fantasy in the sense that it's the action is all in an animal format. It's the animals on this farm, but there are human beings in the story. And in a sense, for children to participate or experience the death of a friend in a book such as this, it's one remove, in a sense, from reality. Rather than making it a realistic fiction book in a fantasy like this, it's one removed, and it is perhaps a way in which children can deal with those issues better than they can if they were humans. And so I really recommend Charlotte's Web to you. There's one whole book of criticism about children's literature that is based, uses this as a model, because it really, in terms of metaphor and language, it is just very well done. Books by Natalie Babbitt are others that I think are delightful. The Search for Delicious is one in which this young Galen goes off. He lives in this kingdom of kings and all of that. And what he is to do is to find something that each letter means. And here he is, delicious. And what could be delicious? Well, you can imagine the troubles he encounters, because nobody can agree about what is delicious. So that's what his search is for, is the search for delicious. It's a fun book. She has also done Goody Hall and Ninoc Rise, and the one that I think is her best is not here, and I don't know whether they have it or not, and that is Tuck Everlasting. And Tuck Everlasting is another book that deals with death, but in a different way. It's a fantasy in which this Tuck family have drunk from this fountain of youth. There's this spring that they drank from, and not knowing that they would never die, that they stopped at that age. So their son, who was 17, is still 17. and they go on living. And the trouble is, of course, that the world is changing, and how do you explain to your neighbors, you know, that you're not dying and your children aren't getting older? And here's this little girl, this Winnie, who strays from her very proper home into the wood, and she meets the 17-year-old there, because every 10 years the Tuck family gets together, because they cannot live together. They have to kind of be dispersed so that they don't attract attention in all of this. Well, Winnie is about to drink from this water, and they stop her, and then the action goes from there, where there's a stranger who wants this water, and he wants Winnie to drink from it, and then he wants to use her as kind of a demonstration to others about this water. And it's the whole business of responsibility, mm-hmm. and it's the whole thing where Mr. Tuck talks to her and tells her that she shouldn't drink, that we're life is a cycle and death is part of life, and that they've kind of fallen off the wheel. You know, life is a wheel, and the Tuck family has kind of fallen off that wheel. Well, those sound like big, heavy issues, but they're done in a delightful story. And that's, I think, what we want in a story. We want a good, interesting story. At the same time, we want something, as adults, we want something more in it for us to really think about. And it comes through for those discerning children. They'll catch it, and they'll enjoy it. For those that don't, they maybe will think about it later, and it'll have some impact. The books by Beverly Cleary, of course, are probably ones that kids go to once they get out of the paper, picture books. They go to Beverly Cleary. She does the Ramona and Henry Huggins and The Mouse and the Motorcycle. Mm-hmm. She's kind of on the same reading level as perhaps the Wilder, the Little House on the Prairie, and those books. So those are delightful kind of standbys that children enjoy. They've got the adventure, they've got the wholesomeness that I think we want our kids to have.
Does anybody remember reading The Boxcar Children?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, that's still a favorite.
Yeah, I wasn't a reader.
That's still a favorite in school, too.
I guess I can always remember reading it. I must have read it 4 times.
Yeah. Well, see, those are the kinds of books then that you should share with your kids.
Mm. Oh, I did. I have told different children about them.
Yeah, you know, because I think it's the books that have been fun for us that we can really, with enthusiasm, give to them. Now, I don't know, I have some books for older readers, but I don't know if you have older children. I think we're all, the older children people left us. Well, these would perhaps, and one thing I think, too, is that you can read to kids a little bit, you know, beyond what they could read themselves, because that's the kind of thing that, you know, I think that's one reason why teachers read. There are a lot of books that kids will never read themselves, but they'll enjoy if you read them to them.
Our boy seems to read books that have words in it that he does not comprehend.
Sure, that's
fine.
But
it doesn't stop him.
Oh, no.
He just goes, once in a while, he'll say, what does this mean? Mm-hmm. But
most of the time, they pick that up in context. It's just like mm-hmm. us. I read lots of books, and I don't stop to look up every word I don't know. You know, you just kind of go along with it. And I think that that's important, you know. One book that I had never read, I don't know if you've read this, this was new to me this year, was The Children of Green Knoll. And this is, Lucy Boston is an English woman, and it seems to me she started writing very late in life, but she's written a series, here they're all listed on the back here, that take place at Green Knoll. And the interesting thing in this book is it comes under we call it fantasy, is this little boy comes to live with his grandmother, and in this kind of a castle in England, and it has all the, you know, the trappings of a castle, and there's a large portrait of these children and this woman hanging on the wall in the drawing room or living room, and they, of course, are his predecessors in that family, and how in this whole warm place that he has come to, that these children come alive for him, and he is like the Tali in the picture, and it's a fantasy kind of thing that the grandmother participates in too, and it's the experiences that they have, and it's I shouldn't say it's a fun book, it's one of those books that become very, there's a mystery to the book, and there's a tension where this whole thing comes crashing down, but it resolves, and there's hope. And I think that's what we look for in children's books, is that there should be some hope. And many of the books that are so popular nowadays are these, what we call this realism in children's books. They deal with drugs and divorce and all of these issues. And I think there is a place for those if they're good stories, but many of them are just, we call them track books, that somebody says, oh, what does the market need now? Or what does the, you know, and they write for the market. And sometimes it doesn't come out to be a very good book. And the lady that was here before talked about Judy Blume, and we have Judy Blume books in our library. And I think, you know, with any author, and I think that's a good one in point, is that you cannot assume that every book an author writes is good. And that, you know, we have kids that go through an author. I do the same thing, you know. I get an author that I like and I read every book by that author. And that's certainly one way of reading. But I think that we have to realize that they're not all of the same level. I was very upset. You know, if you ever heard of Forever, which Judy Blume did. And after she had done Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, which is kind of a neat book for kids at that age level. And then she had done Tales of a Fourth Grade Nothing and several others. Then she came out with Forever, which is the most explicit kind of sexual kind of book that you would... Wouldn't you think that? Would you? And at this bookstore, they had it sitting right next to Tales of a Fourth Grade Nothing. And I mentioned to the bookshop dealer, I said, you know, I says, I think that book is in the wrong place. And he jumped all over me because I was trying to censor. And I says, I'm not trying to censor. I says, I think it belongs with your, you know, teenage young adult books, but it doesn't belong with Tales of a Fourth Grade Nothing. And I think that, you know, as a parent, that's, I'm sure a lot of parents went and bought Forever and never even looked at it. And when I read it, I just about flipped. But anyway, Children of Green, no, you wouldn't flip. And then The Wizard of Earthsea by Ursula Le Guin. This would be for your upper elementary, your junior high kids. This is a trilogy and very well done. It's a fantasy type thing. The Narnia books, the C.S. Lewis Narnia books, are ones that we shouldn't omit, and we have to stop. But for those with middle school kids, you could start reading them to your kids when they're in third and fourth grade, and they'd really like those too.